You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it's a good week to be a Ticats fan. We get to talk about a big come-from-behind victory. But before we get to all that, I get to gloat a little bit. Last week, you and I very controversially spent quite a bit of time debating the merits of comic book cinema. And I decided in my infinite wisdom, let's put a poll on Twitter about this. And the options were A, comic book movies are awesome and Mike is dumb, or they're stupid and Josh is a nerd. And after a week's worth of votes on Twitter, we finally have a definitive answer. And Mike, it's a pretty stunning victory for you being dumb. 64% said comic book movies are awesome. 36% said they're stupid and that I'm a nerd. So Mike, eat your crow and accept the fact that comic book cinema is here to stay and that people love them.
Well, I'm not going to admit any of that. I mean, it proves my synopsis that 60 whatever percent of the populations are dumb people that are amused by stupid explosions and terrible stories. So, you know, that just proves that I'm an intellectual and all the rest of you are, you know, mouth-breathing morons.
All right. Quit playing the hashtag.
No,
quit
playing the heel. I don't think that. Or do I?
Dun dun dun. For the next episode, we'll find out what Mike feels like. And one other thing that I want to touch on, our podcast brethren on Three Down, Joel Gasson, John Fraser on the Three Down Greencast, came up with a fun little thing in preparation for Grey Cup. You've probably heard of like the Grey Cup fit up and all those other things where people exercise to get ready for Grey Cup. John and Joel are like, nah, man, we ain't about that life. Mike, I don't want to speak for you, but I ain't about that exercise life. So they came up with the Grey Cup Grease Up, which is basically we stuff our faces full of fatty foods and bad for us drinks leading up to the Grey Cup. I am 100% in on this with them. Are you going to join me? I know you're a pretty skinny dude, but I feel like you have a fat guy heart. Am I wrong? I've seen some of the stuff. You love your barbecue sauces. You love your alcoholic beverages, especially your beers. I feel like you're a fat man at heart. Am I wrong there?
I am a fat, skinny dude, but I mean, I'm not all about those vegetables and you know, exercising and all that stuff. So I am definitely on the side of the Grey Cup grease up.
All right, so Joel, John, when you listen to this, let's grease it up, pals. And when we get to Edmonton, I know you and I are going to be there on the latest episode of the show. I think both of them semi-committed to going. We gotta have a big blowout and just like gorge ourselves on some nachos, some chicken wings, guzzle a bunch of beers. Just the four of us together, the Grease Up Crew, which is what I'm calling us. We're gonna get ourselves super fat going into Grey Cup and then at Grey Cup. I think it's gonna be a good time. So guys, I know you're listening to the show. Let's get ourselves all fattened up for Grey Cup and then let's fatten ourselves up more when we get to Edmonton in November.
I am excited for this, Josh. Very excited.
This is more exciting than the game and all the parties. Like, we're just going to sit around and eat fat food? That's great for me.
Yeah. Yeah, we watch some comic book movies. You know, great. We can skip that part. Yeah.
Well, what we can't skip, buddy, is talking about Thursday night's game. And it was a pretty good night, I think, to be a Ticats fan. Our guys in the black and gold overcame a 14-point deficit to down the visiting squad from Edmonton 25-24. Ticats stormed out to a 10-point lead in the first quarter, watched that completely disintegrate in the second quarter when Edmonton scored 24 unanswered points, but then the good guys chipped away as the game went on, and the final 30 minutes found a way to get that much-needed win. When this was all over, Mike, how did you feel?
I was ecstatic. To be honest with you, I didn't think we'd be able to pull out this victory. I mean, after that, and I don't want to pick on Mike Jones. Mike Jones actually had a really good game, numbers-wise. But after that drop, that was a for sure touchdown, I thought, oh, okay, it's over. You know, like, pack it in. We're done. Another close loss. You know, it's in the can. But they proved me wrong, and I was freaking out on that next play by Tasker. I mean, what a phenomenal player, Josh. It was just – it was a really good game to watch. It was an entertaining football game, just like all, pretty much all games this weekend.
Yeah, you know what? We're kind of hitting that sweet spot. I think you talked about it last week where we're getting into that mid-season part of the CFL season where all the kinks have kind of been worked out. We're not seeing a ton of players rotating in and out except via injury. We're seeing teams pretty much establish themselves, and what we're seeing is close, tight, exciting football. It's one-point games. It's touchdown. Like, there's the occasional blowout. Like, a few weeks ago, we saw Hamilton blow up Montreal. I think this past weekend, Calgary won by a couple of scores against Winnipeg. But for the most part, we're seeing tightly contested contests. And this is probably the tightest, in my memory, that I can think of, the CFL ever being this late in the season.
Yeah, it's wonderful to watch because I think I said it last week, you know, the football hasn't been great, you know, leading up to the last couple of weeks, but we're really starting to see teams come together and click, especially offensively. We're seeing some good offensive football, and it's just exciting time.
Yeah, so what was great in this game, Mike, and it's the main story from the game, and it's that fourth quarter comeback. And it's not just the final drive, which we're going to dive into pretty deeply. It was the last three drives of the game for this Ticats team. They were down going into the fourth quarter, and in the final three drives of the game, the clutch time of the game, they go down, they get a field goal, they get a touchdown, and then they drive the field and get a field goal to win the game. The one thing that's hung over Jeremiah Mazzoli's head, and they talked about it on the broadcast when I rewatched the game, is that he had never led a fourth quarter comeback before. He had never taken a team that was down and brought them back to win the game. He got that monkey off his shoulder in this one, and kind of in a big way, because it wasn't only the one drive that sealed the game with the victory on the last second field goal. It was leading up to it where he had to make play after play, and the offense had to make play after play, and the defense had to come up, and it was just solid complementary football all around. And I think this is one of those wins, and I when I wrote my piece for Three Down, it's kind of the main thesis of my argument. One of those wins that can alter a season for a team, where you go down to a team like Edmonton, who come in this game 6-3. They were won four of their last five, I believe. They looked good. They get that big lead in the second quarter where they looked unstoppable. And the Ticats found a way to win. Good teams find a way to win games that maybe they shouldn't. And I'm not saying the Ticats shouldn't have won this, because for three of the four quarters in this game, I feel like they were by far the better team. But they took a good football team in Edmonton, brought them here, and beat them. That can alter your season in a way that could springboard these guys for the next nine games and into the playoffs to maybe make some hay and do some damage.
Yeah, and you talk about the three final drives that were you know, spectacular to watch, and just, you know, as a fan, you want to see that. You want to see your team rally back when, you know, it's tough, when the going gets tough, and that's exactly what they did. But in this second half of this football game, the Edmonton Eskimos scored 0 points. This Eskimos team is extremely good offensively. You know, they were a little bit questionable on the defensive side of the ball, but Mike Riley leads the league in yards and touchdowns. You know, they got C.J. Gable. They got a plethora of very, very talented receivers. So to hold a team like that to 0 points in two quarters is really encouraging to see.
Absolutely. And it was the defense on that final series. Edmonton gets the big play to get to mid. Well, I guess it wasn't a huge play, but they get the play to Duke Williams that gets him about 13, 14 yards, and you're thinking, okay, this is when Edmonton kind of kicks into the next gear. They're just going to grind this one out. They're going to get the W. And then the defense gets a stop. And then Simone gets a sack. And then it's like, okay, they're punting. All right, the Ticats have an opportunity here. And then special teams, which has been kind of a elephant's graveyard for this team all year, doesn't get a spectacular return, but Brandon Banks gets a decent return, gets him in reasonable field position. You're going, okay, if Mazzoli can pick up like 40 yards here, they're in really good field goal position. The offense comes out. Mazzoli makes one of those only Mazzoli can make plays where he's thrown off his back foot, three guys in his face, throws it up, which is one of those ones where if it's intercepted, you're cursing him out. But Terrence Oliver comes back for the ball, makes a big catch. Felix Faubert-Lucier, who came in for Chris Williams, had a first down catch. They hand the ball off to Alex Green. And this I didn't notice live, but noticed on my rewatch of the game. Riker Matthews comes out. He's a pulling tackle. And Avery Jordan's there. And Matthews essentially takes out two guys to spring Green on the edge to pick up 12, 13 yards to put them in what was essentially chip shot range. And then Liram Hirelahu comes out and kicks the game-winning field goal with no time left in the clock. It was one of the best displays of what coaches call complementary football I have seen in some time, and I feel like that final drive by the offense was one of the best drives they've had in a clutch situation in years. It was just top to bottom from defense, special teams, offense. That's exactly what you want to see out of the team, and that's exactly what we got. And it gives you a good feeling going into the second half of the season.
Yeah, we've been in this situation before many times this year. You know, we have a chance to either score a touchdown and tie or whatever in the last drive. And this time it was only, you know, we're only down by 2 points, but the yards still had to be gained. And I thought that, you know, Mazzoli executed it beautifully. Alex Green chipped in, but the play calling was, you know, it's been questioned in the last couple of games, but I thought the play calling on that last drive was really good. You know, they ran the ball 2 times with Alex Green, and then Mazzoli ran it for 6 yards on the last play before the field goal. I mean, they weren't panicking. There were less than a minute left, but they were still running the ball, and they were being effective running the ball. So I think you got to tip your hat a little bit to June Jones for the play calling as well.
Absolutely. And speaking of tipping our hat, let's talk about the things we loved about this game, Mike. Let's kick it over to you first. And I don't know which one you're going to start with, but I know it's two things that you have not wanted to talk about more than Luke Tasker in the run game. So where are we going first, pal?
I'm gonna go with the run game.
Of course you are.
Yes, I just have to, because I mean, this they ran the damn ball, did they not? I mean, the amount of plays, I think they had 44 passing plays, 25 rushing plays. I mean, that's not, you know, the last couple of games has been close to 50-50, but we didn't have the time of possession we did in this game, I believe. So they didn't give up with the run game. You know, it didn't start off that well with Alex Green running the ball, but they just stuck with it. And eventually, you know, he gets over 100 yards. He has a 5-yard average. That's just, once again, really encouraging to see that they just didn't give up on it after, you know, a couple times that it didn't work, because they could have. They very well could have. And they didn't, and in the end, it pays off for them, and they get the win.
Come on. I know what you want to say. Call me an idiot. Come on. I know you want to do it.
Well, Alex Green, I mean, you're an idiot, because where is John White, my friend? Where is John White? You know, Alex Green, June Jones is a loyal guy. I said this before, and Alex Green is his guy. He comes back in. He starts the last couple games, and it's been paying off. He's been doing really well. He has a nose for the end zone. That 10-yard run at the start of the game for a touchdown was a thing of beauty. Yeah, I just can't say enough good things about Alex Green right now.
He's got 5 touchdowns on the season. I think he's played 3 games so far. That's you know what? I know we like to joke about me calling you a complete idiot when we're talking about changing running backs, but, dude, you were right. You were right. Alex Green has come into this offense and has done something that John White couldn't do. And I still think John White is a talented player, and I think could be productive in this offense. But Alex Green is productive in this offense, and June Jones was right to stick with him. I do have to ask you one question, though. How do you feel about him spinning the football all the time after he picks up a big play?
Well,
I got you on that one, didn't I?
Okay, my problem with Ken Elliott was he'd spin the damn ball after every play, okay? Alex Green, if he has a big run or whatever, if he wants to spin the ball, I have no problem with that. None at all.
Okay, I was curious as to where you were going to go with that, because I know how much you hate guys spinning their balls.
Yeah, I do not like balls being spun. But yeah, I think, you know what, Kevin Elliott has stopped that in BC, although he had a terrible game last week.
I mean, he stopped it because he hasn't caught any passes.
Right, true. But on to the next thing I really liked, my boy, Mr. Luke Tasker. Woo. 9 receptions, 156 yards, 17.3 yard average, a long of 51 and a touchdown. And you know that long of 51, you know what play that was. That was the play after the Mike Jones drop, which I don't want to harp on too much, but that was terrible.
Oh, don't worry. I'll be harping on it a lot.
Okay. Well, good. But, I mean, this guy is just, he's a football player. Am I right? I mean, that catch and run, I don't even know what to say about it. It was just, it saved the game, basically. I thought it was over after the last play. Tasker makes that catch. There's two guys that come at him to tackle him. Somehow he gets away and then runs 51 yards to the end zone. It was a thing of beauty, Josh. What was it like to watch that play live in the stadium?
It happened right in front of us. Essentially, we had tickets. We had to change our seats that we normally sit in. We're normally high up in the 200 section. We had to move down to the 100s because we brought some friends and family over. My friends that got to come to the game with us, they brought some family members over from Scotland. So they were taking in their very first ever football game. They were coming over for a time, wanted to come to a Ticats game. This was the only game that was at Tim Hortons Field where they were here. So we had to move our seats to accommodate them, which was fine. We had some great seats for this game. We were pretty much there at the 40-yard line when Tasker broke that open, and we were just going nuts, high-fiving, jumping up and down, going crazy. The thing I want to highlight about it, outside of the Mike Jones drop that came to play before, because as I said, I am going to get to that in a second. The thing that people aren't talking about enough, I think, on this play, that came on 3rd and 2. If Tasker drops that ball, now, he didn't have to score a touchdown, he gets to pick up 2 yards, and him catching the ball was enough for the first down. If Tasker drops that ball, or if those hits that he took from those two guys, like you said, jars the ball loose, the game is over, and the Ticats lose that football game. But what does Tasker do? Because he's Luke, by God, Tasker, makes the catch, makes guys miss, and then is just, he's gone. And he's getting tremendous blocking downfield, which we're also going to talk about in a little bit. It was a thing of beauty, Mike. And I find it funny that a week after you and I sat here, man, what's Luke Tasker doing? Why isn't Luke Tasker more involved in the game plan? He's the team's leading receiver. He's the TSN player of the game. He just has one of the best games of the season that he's had, maybe one of the best games of his career. I'm not going to say that the Ticats brass listens to what we say, but I just find it very coincidental that Luke Tasker has a big game a week after we say, why isn't Luke Tasker getting the football more? Look what happens when he does. Good things happen, and we get happy.
Yes, we get very happy. Maybe he had some dude with Jalen Saunders not being in the game, but it doesn't matter. Whoever was in the game, and Luke stepped up big time.
Yeah, so what I want to talk about is kind of dovetailing into your talk about Luke Tasker. Brandon Banks was not super involved in this game. Looking at his numbers, 3 catches for 27 yards. Not a Brandon Banks game. We're used to Brandon Banks putting up 100 yards a game more weeks than not. But even though he wasn't involved in getting the ball a lot, he still made an impact in this game with his blocking, which is not something you'd expect to hear from a guy who's 5'7" and like 160 pounds. But he threw a couple of blocks to spring some guys. One was on the catch that Mike Jones actually made, the long bomb that Mazzoli threw from the end zone that Jones caught and picked up, I want to say 80-something yards. You watch Brandon Banks, he's sprinting down the field to get a block to spring Jones, hopefully for a touchdown. Jones didn't score, still a big play, led to a field goal, I believe. And then on the Tasker touchdown, Tasker makes the catch, turns it upfield. You see Brandon Banks full tilt sprinting, finishing. You watch that play again, he's finishing his block out of bounds as Tasker's crossing the goal line. For someone who people like to pick on Brandon Banks a little bit, say he's kind of emotional, maybe a little bit temperamental, and you can kind of see that. In this game, I even noticed he was going down the field, the ball didn't get thrown to him, and he kind of like jumped up and down like angrily, like, oh, I was open. If he would have seen me, I would have been gone. He does play kind of on the edge emotionally. So for a guy like that who's not getting the ball, who's not being a focal point of the offense, for him to still late in the game be out there running full speed to make blocks, that tells you a lot about his character and also a lot about he's a team guy, man. And like just seeing that, it's like that's for a guy his size, that's impressive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It shows that he gives a damn about this team. He cares about winning. You know, he's not complaining that he's not getting the ball necessarily because he's showing so much effort when he doesn't get the ball. So, yes, he can be a little bit temperamental and, you know, loses cool sometimes, but the guy really cares. And I'd rather be him caring than not caring, you know what I mean? So, we're going to give him a pass on his little antics that he throws sometimes because the guy just gives full effort all the time.
It makes him the player that he is. So, if he's got to play with that edge, if he's got to be that emotional, It makes him the player that he is. So I'm fine with it. Let's talk about the defense here, man, because this is the second point of the game that I just absolutely loved. Outside of the second quarter, this defense dominated. You mentioned earlier, no points allowed in the second half at all. Some other things from this second half that this defense did to kind of will this – they did their part to get the Ticats back into this game and to get this W. Five first downs allowed the entire second half, and not one drive did Edmonton have where they had multiple first downs. They had five first downs on five drives, one each. That's incredible. Edmonton's eight second half drives go fumble, punt, 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 punt. You can't ask for much better than that. Aside from interception touchdown, fumble touchdown, aside from the defense scoring, that's about as good as you can ask from the defense. That in the second quarter was a bit tough, and I know we're going to talk about that in a second, but in that second half, they were absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, they were getting after the quarterback. You know, they had three sacks on the night. Yeah, it's defense is good, man. They're really good. And, you know, one guy that really stood out to me, there wasn't like a bunch of guys that stood out, but one guy that really did, he was just making tackles, he was making plays all night, was Jamal Roll. And he might not show up huge on the stat sheet. He had two defensive tackles, and that's about it. But the guy was just, I just can't say enough about him in this game. Did you see what I saw from him?
Yeah, he's been a star, kind of like an unheralded star. He plays that wide side corner position, doesn't see a ton of action, but when he does, he's making plays. He made a great shoestring open field tackle on, I believe it was Darrell Walker, that stopped Edmonton from getting a first down. Like, this Hamilton secondary, which one of those things that coming into the season we were really worried about, that Sam linebacker, they've kind of figured it out, no?
I think so. I mean, judging by these, minus the second quarter where the Eskimos scored 24 points, you know, to shut down an offense led by Mike Riley with Duke Williams and Darrell Walker and all these Kenny Stafford, all these talented guys, to shut them down for most three quarters of the game, I mean, that's an accomplishment right there.
All right, we have to talk about some of the things we didn't like about this game, unfortunately, because despite the fact that our boys came out with a victory, it wasn't a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. So, Mike, why don't you get into some of the things about this game that untickled your fancy, if you will.
Liram Haralau, he was 4 of 5 for field goals, and maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him, but I did not think he had that great a game, especially punting the ball. I'm looking at punts. He had 5 punts, an average of 37.8. We had a couple opportunities to pin the Eskimos deep, and that just didn't happen because he wasn't punting the ball very well. That's just plain and simple. He missed a field goal that I thought he should have made, and it was, you know, important at the time of the game when it was at. So I did not like his performance that much. Yes, he kicked the winning field goal. Yes, he made 4 out of 5, but overall, I just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things where I think you look at the end of a game and he makes the kick that matters. And yes, he went 4 of 5 and contributed to the team. It kind of overshadows the things he didn't do well. Like that one, I think it was his first or second punt that went like 20 yards. It's like, man, they should have just gone for it in that case because they gained almost nothing in field position. And it's for a team like Hamilton that's had a hard time this year winning the field position battle, those things hurt.
Yeah, all season long we've been, you know, starting inside the 20 and the other team has been at midfield, and that's just one of the big reasons why we've been losing these close games is because of field position. And we finally have a chance to do it and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't make those punts. But, you know, a little bit of nitpicking there, but also I'd like to touch on the Mazzoli interceptions, especially that first one to J.C. Sherritt. That was a pretty bad pick. And listen, I love Mazzoli. I think that he's our guy. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think he gets way too much heat from some fans. But those interceptions need to stop happening so much. You know, he only has 9 touchdown passes on the year, I believe, and more interceptions. So those need to stop. They just can't keep happening. If we keep turning the ball over, then we're going to lose more games than we win. So if I had to, you know, throw a criticism at Mazzoli for this season, it'd be too many picks.
Yeah, which is weird because it's the one thing he didn't do last year. We thought he was over this, right? And it's come back in a major way. Sometimes they happen in critical situations, like we saw in week 1 in Calgary. Throws an interception late in the game on what could have been a potential game-leading, if not game-winning drive. And yeah, it's the one thing that I think he still needs to shake. Like I thought he shook it last year, and then it seems to have come back in a big way this year. I don't know why that is, because protecting the football is something he did extremely well last year. It just sucks because I feel like this team has I believe, something like 12 or 13 rushing touchdowns. And they're, I believe, the fourth highest scoring offense in the CFL. So, yeah, he only has 9 touchdown throws, but he's orchestrated 20-plus touchdown drives. And I think that that's something that's worth looking at more than just say how many touchdown passes he has. But the interceptions are right. I think he has 10 on the year. That's too many. That 10, to me, when I think of quarterbacks, 10 is maybe how many you throw on the season. To have 10 by the midway point of the year, like, that's not good. And I know that we're Danny Mac fans, and Danny Mac used to throw a ton of interceptions. That was a different game. Now it's about protecting the football. And again, I thought Mazzoli played a really good game and came up big when he had to. But yeah, I'm with you, pal. Those picks, oh God, I wish he could just get rid of it.
Yeah, hopefully that will improve, and I think it will. And it's easy to look at the touchdown passes to interceptions and go, oh, he's not a very good quarterback. But you're right. Like, we're scoring touchdowns in different ways. He doesn't have to throw a million touchdown passes in the year. He can, hand the ball off or whatever. As long as we score touchdowns, I don't care. But the interceptions and the fumbles that I didn't touch on the fumbles either. But I don't think he fumbled in this game. But
no, Banks had the fumble in this one. That was also bad.
Right. But he has fumbled a lot this season, it seems. So just the turnovers in general need to be worked on.
Okay, so Mike Jones, who I am redubbing, this is his official name, and from this point on, whenever we talk about him, Mike, this is what we have to call him. Motherfucking Mike Jones. Mm-hmm. The drop. He had a really good game in this one. The big 80-plus yard catch, I absolutely loved. But man, and the thing that frustrates me about this drop more than maybe anything else from his game is the move he made on the DB. Mazzoli does the pump fake. Jones does this like stutter step. He beats him so badly, Jones should have been arrested for it. But motherfucking Mike Jones drops and hits him in the face. And it's just like, man, like if this guy could put it together and get rid of these things, like we talked about Mazzoli interceptions, if Mike Jones could get rid of the drops, he would be up there in the talk about the top Canadian receivers in the game. But God damn it, this pissed me off so much, man.
It's so Mike Jones, right? I mean, like I still believe in this kid. Gosh darn it, I still do. He needs to. Like, if you make that play, say if Tasker doesn't make that tremendous play. I mean, if Mike Jones makes that play, we're right back in it. Those are the types of catches you need to make if you want to be a starting receiver on a professional football club, okay? Wide open, you make a beautiful move. It's the easiest catch in the history of catches, but it goes off your face like you're hoping to catch it like Ace Ventura. Remember in Ace Ventura when he was at Dolphins training camp and they threw the ball at Dan Marino with his laser arm? But you can't catch the ball with your face, Mike. You can't do it. So, he's a bit of a whipping boy on the show, and he's a whipping boy for the Ticats fandom. But, these are the things. This is why people, like to pick on Mike Jones, because of situations and drops like these.
Another whipping boy, unfortunately, is going to be Mariel Cooper, who got the start in this one because Richard Leonard was injured. He did not have a good game, and he did not have a good second quarter. He was burned for all 3 Edmonton touchdowns. He had a pass interference penalty set up one of those touchdowns. He was benched in the second half for Josh Johnson, who had just recently come on the team. And while it's never on just one player, it's hard to say that Cooper wasn't the weak link of this defense, because once he got out there, that D played significantly better in the second half. I'm not sure I can recall a DB having a worse game, or in this case, a worse quarter than Mariel Cooper had in the second quarter against Edmonton this one. That was rough to watch.
Yeah, it's so much easier to identify poor defensive back play when your defense is playing man to man, because that if he gets beat, then it's pretty much his fault, unless, you know, they're playing a cover two or a cover one and there's supposed to be, you know, some help over the top from the safety on a deep pass or something. But if you're getting beat on a 10, 15 yard route, then it's on you if they're playing man to man. So yeah, it was not a good night for him. Hopefully we get Richard Leonard back as quick as possible, because we can't be giving up all those yards on a nightly basis. Excuse me.
And I understand that it was Duke Williams and Darrell Walker, two of the best, if not the two best receivers in the CFL, but you're on the field, man. You got to make plays, and he got burnt, and it was not fun. What else wasn't fun, Mike? Chris Williams' injury, man. This just sucked. And we've recently found out it was an Achilles injury. He has had surgery. He is done for the year. Kind of sucked the wind out of the stadium when it happened. And Williams comes back. It's traded here to Montreal, has the homecoming. Fans are ambivalent about whether or not they want to cheer for him because he's a traitor and all that other sorts of nonsense. And you and I were like, no, you know, welcome him back into the fold. It looked like he had finally been getting comfortable in the offense. He had two catches on the previous three plays prior to the injury, nearly had a touchdown catch late in the game. Like, he had looked like Jalen Saunders was injured in this one, looked like Williams was getting integrated into the offense more. It looked like he was about to maybe get better and better and break out near the end of the season and be that dominant receiver we saw in Ottawa, we saw in Hamilton this last go around here. Just to see him get hurt, man, it just blows. I feel so bad for the kid, because this is just another piece of injury bad luck for him, and just a damn shame.
Yeah, and, you know, he wasn't touched. He just...
Yep. It was like Van Tuzen's injury a couple years ago, right? Like, where he just he falls and it's just like... Well, that's never good.
I thought it was like maybe it could have been a hamstring or something, or something not major, but then they had to carry him off the field. And I'm like, maybe there's something to this. And you're right. Like, he was just starting to get rolling, it seemed. You know, he's making some catches earlier in the game. You know, it's very unfortunate. I do feel bad for him. Hopefully we can find a decent replacement, whether it's in-house, or if we go pick someone else up off the free agent market.
Wow, you are so good at reading my mind, because the next thing out of my mouth was, who do you think can replace this guy? I don't think there's a ton of guys out there who can replace his skill set, but are there any names that you can think of? Maybe, like, in-house, they have Rashad Lawrence, who played a few games earlier this year. I think that's what they'll end up doing. Like, Terrence Tolliver has been the team's designated import, or one of the team's designated imports, almost all season. Saunders is probably going to be coming back, but when, who knows? Saunders gets back, Tolliver just slides into the offense as a starter. You bring Lawrence on as one of the DIs, maybe you do that. But let's have some fun with this, Mike. Outside of the Ticats' current roster, is there anyone out there that you'd like to see them bring in to maybe not necessarily replace Williams from a talent standpoint or from a skill set standpoint, but to take his place in the roster?
Well, our boy Adam sent in a question this week, Adam Stalker, and, you know, he mentioned Pekari Grant. I'm not with him on that. He doesn't excite me. He's a free agent. I know he had 1,000 yards last season. He's a decent receiver, but I don't see them bringing him in. But he did mention Terrell Sinkfield, and I hope Sinkfield, you know, sticks in the NFL. But according to Adam, there's 13 DBs in camp for the Jets. You know, he hasn't played DB his whole career. He's been a receiver for, as far as I know, for all of his career. I would love to see him. If anyone comes in, I would love it for him to be in. Could you imagine him playing in this run and shoot offense? I think it'd be a thing to behold.
It'd be pretty fun. Before I get to another name that I'm going to throw out there, I'm just going to make sure that everyone knows it's @Mike_Ticats. To all the Pekari Grant fans, and there are a lot in Tiger Town, listen to the show, that are Pekari Grant fans, that's @Mike_Ticats. I'm throwing you under the bus, pal. Inundate his mentions with why he's an idiot here. I like the idea of Sinkfield. I'm hesitant to say this, dude. Former Ticat player, former most outstanding player, knows June Jones because he was coached by him at the University of Hawaii. Used to wear number 2. Chad
interesting.
Owens?
Interesting. What about That's Flying interesting.
Hawaiian? What about the Flying Hawaiian?
He's still out there. I completely forgot about him. You know what? I would not be against that. I mean, you're right. You're right. He does know June Jones. He's from Hawaii. That would be actually a pretty good fit. I like that idea.
I just, Man, so you're for Chad Owens, but against Bakari Grant? You're going to be the most hated Ty Cat fan on the planet.
Listen, I think that Chad Owens brings more to the table than Bakari Grant would, just speed-wise. I think he's a better fit for this offense. I think, I think it's a good idea, Josh. I like him coming in over Bakari Grant. Yes, I'm sorry.
At Mike_Tyke.
Yes.
That's where you can find him. Joe Monford went into the Wall of Honor in this one. We have to talk about it because Joe Monford was a beast for the Ticats. I want to talk about some Joe Monford stuff. And I'm not just saying this because, as Mike can attest, as I sent him during the game, I met Joe Monford. He was coming up the steps. I got a picture with him, got to thank him for what he did with the Ticats, tell him that it was well-deserved. This man is still jacked to the gills. His arms make my legs look like toothpicks. It was impressive to see. The ovation he got at halftime, like, he's part of that golden era of our fandom, right, Mike? Like, from that 98-99 squad that went to and then won the Grey Cup. It's just fitting, right? Like, he was one of the best of his era and maybe one of the best of all time. And I feel like, I don't think he doesn't get overlooked, but I think we forget just how much of a monster Joe Monford was on the football field, especially during that one run there where he had 20 or more sacks for like four straight years, the most of any player in over a four-year span, three-time most outstanding defensive player. Obviously, he's in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, but it was almost 20 years ago that this team won a Grey Cup, but Joe Monford was a big part of that, and it was nice to kind of get to celebrate him. I know you weren't in Hamilton, unfortunately, for it, but what are some of your memories of the monster that was Joe Monford?
Well, I was going to mention that 4 years with 20-plus sacks, but then you just said it, so whatever.
Sorry, pal.
The guy was just – he was unbelievable. He's coming off that edge, there was no one better than him. The quarterbacks had just probably had nightmares, you know, the couple of nights before they had to play the Hamilton Ticats because this guy was coming for him with his jacked arms and his – you know, just his hustle. And he was just – he's probably the best defensive player I've ever seen play for the Ticats, and that's – there's been some good ones over the years, over the 30-plus years that I've been watching, or not 30-plus, maybe 20, high 20s. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing much more I can say about him than he was a beast. He was dominant, and he deserves to be on that Wall of Honor, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think outside of Ozzy, who was obviously – he had a foot in the 80s as well as on that 90s team. I think he's the first guy from that late 90s squad to get – up there. And I, you know, yep. Hitchcock and Morreale and Gerald Vaughn and obviously, you know, Danny Mac. I can't really think of a player that's more deserving than Joe Monford just because he was, I've said it a few times, I'll say it again, he was a beast. He was simply put a beast. And
Hamilton,
it was a pleasure to watch him play.
Yeah, absolutely. Hamilton loves defensive football. And he was, you know, the face of at least the defensive side of the ball, maybe the whole team. He was just, he fit into that Hamilton culture. He fit into the team, you know, Steeltown, tough working, hard working defense. He was just spectacular.
All right. Speaking of spectacular, we got a Podsky Player of the Week to hand out, and this was an absolute no-brainer. Mike, who do we got this week?
We got our boy Luke Tasker, 9 receptions, 156 yards. 17.3-yard average and a long of 51 and a touchdown. The long of 51 and the touchdown came on that huge, huge 3rd-and-2 play where he just made magic happen. Luke Tasker, our Podsky Player of the Week.
First one for Tasker this year, but I'm going to assume it's not going to be his last. He looks like he's about to hit his stride. All right, pal. Ticats news, there is none, but I thought we would take a moment. We have officially hit the midway point of the season. Not only is the Labor Day Classic on the horizon, but the Ticats have played 9 of their 18 games this season. And I just kind of wanted to get the tenor, how you feel. What are your general thoughts about where the Ticats are at the midway point of the 2018 season?
Well, as usual, being a Ticats fan, there's going to be a lot of ups and a lot of downs during the season since we just, you know, we're a 9-9 team. If we're good, we're a 9-9 team. But listen, looking back on last year, like where we were at this point, you got to be somewhat happy. You know, 4-5 isn't spectacular. They've lost some games they probably should have won. This team, I believe, is better than what their record shows right now. But listen, we're in a good spot in the East. We're sitting in second place. You know, Ottawa's pulling away a little bit, but we're still only 4 points behind them with some games to be, you know, played against each other. We're sitting pretty good, I think, right now. And I'm pretty optimistic about the second half of the season because we have not seen the best of this team yet.
Yeah, the team is not where I thought they'd be. Looking back on the schedule, I think I had them at either 5 or 6 wins in the first half of the season. Losing both to Saskatchewan surprised me a little bit. But they swept
Edmonton. It surprised us a lot at the time.
At the time, yes, absolutely at the time. Looking back, Saskatchewan, I feel like you look at a team like Saskatchewan, you look at a team like Winnipeg, and I think you can even lump Edmonton in with this now, and Hamilton. That's kind of your like middle class there. I think you've got Calgary clearly at number one. I think Ottawa's done enough to distance themselves as the favorites in the East right now at 6-3. But you got that middle class of teams there. Toronto's and BC are kind of like just on the outskirts of that. And then, of course, you have Montreal. But they swept Edmonton this year, which we talked about last week. They hadn't done since 2006. They split with Winnipeg. They still have an opportunity to split with Calgary, whether they will or not, I don't know. They still have a chance to split or sweep with BC. And you mentioned they're 2 games behind the Red Blacks. They got 2 games remaining against the Red Blacks. They got 2 games coming up against the Argos. I don't know if they can win both of them, but if they do win both of them, they've pretty much secured a playoff spot because they will be 3 games up on the Argos, holding the tiebreaker, which essentially puts them 4 games up on the Argos after those 2 games with 7 games left to play. That's a hard road for anyone to climb. So if they can win these next 2 against Toronto, I think that sets them up really nicely for the second half. Even if they just win 1, I think we're looking at a team then that's still around that 500 mark, which is forever frustrating. But, and I hate saying they hold their destiny in their own hands, because if it's destined to happen, then you can't control it. But with 2 games against Ottawa coming up late in the season, they still have Montreal. Like, I feel like in the second half of the season, this team can really make some money. I think they've underachieved based on what I think we hoped for. But I will take 4-5 after 9 games over 0-8 heading into Labor Day, any season you give it to me.
Yeah, there's just, you know, the record is what it is, but I think there's so much promise. This defense is really good. The offense can be really good. Mazzoli still needs to play his best football. You know, the offensive line still has 2 rookies on the offensive line, and I think they're going to get better as well. So, yes, 4-5 kind of sucks. I want it to be, you know, 7-2 or 6-3. That would be amazing. But it is what it is right now. And I think we're sitting pretty. You're right. If we win these 2 next games against Toronto, that would be a huge deal. If we win 1, it'd be a huge deal. So it's going to be tough in the second half of the season. I think the East Division is starting to get better. You know, maybe even Montreal gets a little bit better. Maybe even Montreal makes a push. Who knows? So I think they're going to have to improve quite a bit. But I think they will. So I think we're going to be good.
All right, let's talk about the second half of the season. Let's make some quick, rapid-fire answers to this. And I guess these are sort of predictions. First one, Mike, will they finish above 500 on the year?
Yes.
What do you think they win, 10, 11?
Oh, I'm going to go bold and say 11. That'll be a new team record, but
11 wins. So that would mean they have to win 7 of their remaining 9 games.
Yes.
I like it. That's a bold prediction. I'm going to say they finish above 500. I'm going to say 10, though. I'm not going to be as gutsy as you. I'm going to say they get to 10 wins. I look at their remaining schedule, and I feel like there are 6 wins there to be had. So I'm going to play it cautious and say they get to 10 wins. Will they host the East Final? Are they going to finish first in the East Division?
No, I don't think they will. I think Ottawa's going to finish first. I hope I'm wrong on that, but I think Hamilton will finish second and host the East Semifinal.
Okay. Yeah, I think I got to go with you too. I think they'll get to the East Final because I think they're going to be – I think Ottawa and Hamilton will play in the East Final, but I think that game is going to be in the nation's capital. Last one, Mike. Will the Hamilton Tiger Cats make the Grey Cup?
Yes. Yes, they will. I believe we predicted at the start of the season that they would, so I'm going to stick with that.
I am too. I see no reason. Yes, there's been some ups and downs for this season for this team, but I see no reason to come off that prediction either. Yes, we're homers, duh. But yeah, I think the Cats are going to make the Grey Cup as well. Let's talk some midseason award winners, and we'll do this in kind of a rapid-fire way too. We got this from, was it Adam that sent this question in, I believe?
Yep.
Okay, so we got to give him a he's always providing us with good fodder for the podcast, and we really appreciate it. He's like he's the unheralded third man of the show, and we obviously he's the mysterious benefactor. He's the Ted DiBiase to our new world order. We're Hall and Nash, and I guess we don't need Hulk Hogan, but he's the guy with the money behind us.
The higher power. Like
McMahon. There you go. He's Vince McMahon of the corporate ministry. Yes. Perfect. Even better. Yep. So that makes me the Undertaker, and who are you? Are you Midian? Are you Viscera?
I'll be the boss man. I'll
there
be the
you
boss
go.
Man.
Big boss man, yes. Mike Graham. Yep. I have to be the Undertaker. I got the red hair. So anyway, enough wrestling talk. Let's get to the actual stuff. Gave us some award winners. We didn't do most outstanding linemen because Mike and I are losers and don't really pay attention to offensive line play. It's been kind of tough this year with the in and outs of guys. So we left that one to the graveyard, so to speak. So let's talk most outstanding special teams player. Mike, for me, I have Liram Hirelahu, and it's kind of by default. The team hasn't really used a return guy all that much. I think maybe if I dug into the stats, maybe I could find maybe a Courtney Steven because of what he's done in the coverage game. But almost kind of by there being no other alternative, kind of had to give it to Liram Hirelahu.
Yeah, the exact same as you. You know, there hasn't been a guy returning the ball that has been standing out like a lot. Liram's been pretty solid. Field goals, and you know, besides last game, you know, he's been pretty decent in the punting, so you got to give it to him.
Most outstanding rookie, I want to give a tip of the cap to Jamal Roll. I believe he's eligible for this, but I got to go Darius Sirocco for a first round pick, Canadian kid out of the University of Calgary, to start from day one on the offensive line. That's impressive. So Sirocco gets my pick. What about you, Mike?
I'm totally with you, Sirocco. You know, that's a tough thing to do, to come straight to Canadian University College out of Calgary and start on a professional football team, you know, the first year. It doesn't happen very often, so I'm with you on that. Sirocco gets my vote as well.
Most outstanding Canadian for me was kind of tough. I don't think there's been – look, if, you know, MF or Mike Jones had caught some passes, I think he'd be a no-brainer for this. I went with Ted Laurent. I feel like he's been his usual studly self and just hasn't given me a reason to not think he's the best Canadian on this roster. What about you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. He leads the team in sacks, I believe. So, you know, he's a force in the middle. He always has been, and he still is to this day. And I still think there's a lot of, you know, gas left in that tank. So I got to go with Ted Laurent as well.
Most outstanding defensive player. There are a lot of guys that I think you can pick for this one. I think Simone Lawrence has had a bit of a bounce back year. Ted Laurent obviously would be a candidate for this. I went with Delvin Bro because I think his addition to the secondary is what solidified this group. He's been a shutdown corner. We see it week in, week out. Teams are afraid to throw to his side of the field. That's why Delvin Bro gets my vote. Mike, what do you say?
I went with Simone. I totally see why you'd go with Bro. He hasn't been here quite long enough. He's been amazing, don't get me wrong, and he was close second in my voting, quote unquote. But I got to go with Simone. I think he's been, you know, the best linebacker on this team all season. You know, I know that's saying a lot because we got a lot of talented linebackers, but I think that Simone is just he's a leader. And he's making plays this year. He didn't have the greatest year last year. Like you said, I think he has been having a really great bounce back season.
So finally, most outstanding player for the Ticats. This was tough for me. I debated between two guys back and forth, and I went with Brandon Banks. And it's not because Jalen Saunders, for anyone wondering, was the other guy that I was going back and forth between. Those are the two guys I was thinking, which one of these guys is MOP? I went with Banks because it's not just the receiving. I mentioned his blocking earlier. He's also done his business to chip in on special teams on returns when forced into it. He hasn't been spectacular on it, but he's willing to do that extra thing. Not saying Saunders isn't willing to do it. Banks is obviously a former most outstanding special teams player, so if you have him on your roster and you need to return kicks, putting Brandon Banks in there is not a bad idea. So, yeah, just kind of his all-around game. I feel like he's just been spectacular this season. So by a hair, and I mean the smallest of hairs, I went Brandon Banks as MOP. What say you, buddy?
I'm with you again. I got to go Brandon Banks. I was debating Jalen Saunders as well. We look at their numbers right here. Receiving yards, Banks has 745. Jalen Saunders has 712. So he edges them out just slightly in that category. And he leads the team in receiving touchdowns. Brandon Banks does. Now that's only three. You know, there hasn't been a ton of passing touchdowns, but still, you got to give it to Banks. He leads the league, leads the team in receiving yards, and leads the team in receiving touchdowns. And like you said, he just gives full effort whether he catches the ball or he doesn't.
All right, so those are our award winners. Anyone listening out there that wants to hit us up with their first half Ticats Awards winners, please feel free to hit us up at PodskiWeeWee. We will maybe talk about some of them at the top of next week's show before we discuss the Ticats and what they did in the Labor Day Classic. We'll use you guys as our push, our kickoff, so to speak, of the week next week. So give us those predictions and those maybe tell us what you think they'll do in the second half and let us know who you think you have as award winners. Let's talk CFL news now, Michael. The big story, obviously, of the week, Daron Carter found a home, and it is up the road from me in Toronto with the Argos. We talked about Carter last week and his release, and I think we both agreed, man, I don't think he's going to go to Toronto. Doesn't seem like a Mark Trestman guy. And lo and behold, Daron Carter signs with the Argos. How surprised were you when you heard the news?
I was surprised, but when you think about it after the fact, you're like, oh, Jim Popp had him in Montreal. Barry Woods was his teammate. SJ Green was his teammate, spoke highly of him. So, yeah, Trestman is, by the books kind of coach, and there's no messing around on his team and all that stuff. But maybe he's the perfect person to take him under his wing and say, hey, this is the way you're supposed to be. You know, this is the way you're supposed to be a professional athlete. You know, this is how you conduct yourself and all that stuff. So, you know, after the fact that I think about it, maybe I'm not that shocked, but when it came down to it and he signed the contract and he was officially with the Argonauts, I was a bit surprised.
I saw someone on Twitter, and I hate the fact that I can't remember who it was, say, is this like the Patriots bringing Randy Moss in? Is this Moss and Belichick, Carter and Trestman? And I think that that's a really good comparison. If anyone is ever going to get the full Monty out of Daron Carter, if everyone's going to get him to harness all that talent and become the player he can be while minimizing any type of distractions, it's Mark Trestman. I don't know how long this marriage will last, but here's the thing that I look at when I think of Daron Carter. He is a media savvy guy. He's willing to talk in front of the camera. He's not willing. He doesn't give you the boilerplate. Oh, we played 110%. We just got to go out there and take a. He's willing to be a quote. That could serve the Argos really well off the field if he produces on the field. If he flames it on the field, it's not going to matter what he can do in the community or what he can do to generate hype. And I know you're going to say, well, it's Toronto. They're going to have a hard time generating hype anyway. They don't care. I get that. I'm just saying, if you're going to – you could market Daron Carter to people in Toronto, even if you have to go, he's the son of a former NFL player. I don't care. I think that could be good for them. And I think in that offense, he could be pretty talented. Let's see how long it lasts. I don't know if you saw it today. Trestman said he won't play against the Ticats in either of the two games, which is kind of like understandable because he has to learn the offense. But yeah, it is a bit of a head scratcher because it's like they got to win these games. They are done essentially if they lose both these games. And I got to think that putting Daron Carter on the field gives them a better chance to win. No.
That's, you know, to me, it would make sense if he sat out the Labor Day game, but then played the rematch afterwards. I mean, that's like 2 weeks in the offense. It's not like he's the quarterback or something, you know. Manziel had like, what?
Four days of practice, something like that.
Five days of practice. And he's the friggin' quarterback. So I don't see why he wouldn't play in the rematch. But, you know, whatever. If they want to take the talent off the field against the Tiger Cats, I'm glad. I'm happy about that.
Well, the thing is, too, you put him on the field even as a wide side receiver, and he's going to attract attention. Like, he's still Daron Carter. So even if he's running fly routes the entire time, if at some point the defense gets a little lackadaisical and McBLT, that's what I'm calling McLeod Bethel Thompson because I don't want to say his name all the time, he sees him open on the wide side, he hucks one up, Carter can go make a play. I don't know. It seems weird to me that they wouldn't bring him in. Do you think this is going to work, though? Do you think it's going to – is this his last – home? Because I honestly think this is his last chance. If he can't coexist with Mark Trestman, I think this might be the last we see of Daron Carter in the CFL. What say you?
Oh, yeah, it could be the last in the CFL. Like, if it doesn't work out here, I could see him signing in the American football of American football or whatever that league is called.
The American football of American football. That is the best name I've ever. That would be a wicked name. The AFA, the American football of American football. What the? Yeah, yes. The Alliance of American Football.
Yeah, conference alliance. He could burn all his. If this doesn't work, he could be done in the CFL. I could see him joining another league, whether it be the American Football Conference of American Football or the XFL, then yeah, that could happen. But he signed with the Argos and he said, I think it's a good fit. But I think he just signed with the Argos because no one else really wanted him. Maybe Hamilton. But I think this could be the last kick of the can in the CFL.
So the CFL also came out earlier this week, or I guess it was late last week, and said they were going to relax the rules on touchdown celebrations. This came in the wake of Duke Williams getting a flag for climbing inside the Booster Juice logo at Commonwealth Stadium. And then there was everyone was up in arms, like, how is he getting flagged for that? Because the night before, I think it was Darvin Adams scored a touchdown and grabbed the TSN camera and used that to celebrate. And it's like, how is Duke Williams crawling through a sign using a prop but taking the camera isn't? So there was some confusion there. The CFL came out and said, look, we're just going to relax these rules. As long as it doesn't go overboard, doesn't delay the game, isn't offensive, doesn't taunt the other team, we're going to let these guys get away with it. Two questions for you, Mike. One, how do you feel about that? And two, how long do you think it takes before someone goes overboard? Did you see this thing about Deontay Spencer and a goat? I feel like we're already reaching ridiculous levels with this already.
What?
You did not see this? Yeah, Deontay Spencer wants a goat brought to the next Red Blacks game, and apparently there's some fans online who are going to make this happen. This already seems to me like it's getting out of hand.
That guy from Major League? Have you ever seen Major League? He wanted to slaughter a live chicken.
Pedro Serrano.
Yes. No, you, Joe Boo. Anyways, I like it. The Canadian Football League should be fun like this. You know, you should be able to do the celebrations. I was offended. They were showing some of the all-time great celebrations on TSN over the weekend, and they did not include the bicycle, which is the greatest touchdown celebration of all times.
The best touchdown celebration of all time. Now, and this is totally Homer bias, Mike. The boat in Winnipeg. That was fantastic.
It was good. Well, what are we, the Argonauts? We're not supposed to be on boats. I mean,
why did the Bombers have a boat?
The synchronicity of the bicycle.
That was pretty dumb. Yeah, no, that was okay. Was that the Stamps, right?
Yeah, it was the Stamps. Yeah,
they did the bobsled one too. They had some good celebrations. You're right. That didn't make the top 10.
They just showed some random celebrations at halftime of a game, and they didn't show it. I digress. One, I'm happy that they loosened up on it because I was at that game in Edmonton. I thought the Booster Juice celebration was good. I had no problem with it. Number two, of course you can go overboard. You know, people can get crazy with these celebrations, but...
like bringing a live goat to a game?
The live goat is slightly over the edge, but a live chicken or pig I'm fine with. Just no goats. Okay?
I want to see Brandon Banks pull a live tiger out of his pants after scoring a touchdown on Labor Day.
Well, that's
is that too much? Is that too much to ask?
I don't know. I don't know if he can.
If he could run a route with a live tiger.
Yeah, I don't know about the production on the field if he has a friggin' tiger in his pants. What are you talking about? Oh my god!
Hey, if people can bring goats, someone, we're tiger cats, man. We gotta bring a tiger, and why not house it in Brandon Banks' pants? That's all I'm saying. Is this too much? Am I being ridiculous?
It's a little bit too much. might get nicked up if you have a tiger in your pants. You know, there might be some injuries downtown. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. How about this? How about he brings a tiger, puts it in the end zone, and then after he scores a touchdown, he saddles it and rides it like He-Man rode Battle Cat on the old He-Man cartoon.
See. Why didn't you just say that in the first place? That's good. I love that idea. Let's make this happen.
All right. So anyone out there that knows where to get a live tiger and can find a way to bring it to Tim Hortons Field for Labor Day, hit me up and we'll see what we can do. Okay. Let's move on from celebrations. One last piece of CFL news to talk about. And this one came kind of out of nowhere. The Lions president, I've lost his name, Rick LaLashur, was doing an interview with TSN 1040 in BC, and he made an offhanded mention that said the league has talked about reducing the time of the quarters from 15 minutes to 12 in an effort to shorten games and, quote, maintain the focus of millennials. Now, the millennial thing, I'm so tired of millennials getting blamed for ruining everything. I just recently saw that millennials got blamed for ruining Hooters because millennials don't like boobs. Mike, you fall into the millennial category. I'm in or out depending on the day of the week. Sometimes I'm a millennial, sometimes I'm not. But you, sir, are a little bit younger than me, so you fall right in the millennial hotbed.
Yeah, if I like boobs.
I'm going to ask if you like – do you like boobs, Mike? Are you a fan of boobs?
Who doesn't like a good set of boobs? I mean, I'm not obsessed with boobs, but, you know, if I went to Hooters, I'd look at some Hooters. Like, you know, I know that technically millennials are into their butts now more than boobs, but we can't be, I mean, come on.
Okay, what has this show become? We're talking about boobs and people riding tigers. I feel like we've jumped the shark here.
Yeah, I think so. I think so,
John. Okay, let's talk about the idea of shortening games by going to 12-minute quarters. Let's scream at the heavens here. Let's stop being millennials. Let's be old men and tell everyone that this is stupid. I don't like this. Yeah. What about you?
No, I'm not for it one bit. I mean, football is supposed to be four quarters, 15 minutes each, you know? 60-minute game, my friend. That's the way – this is not basketball, okay? You know, you talk about millennials, but and then you look at the Toronto Blue Jays, and there's tons of young people going there, or there used to be, maybe not this year, but they were like the hip, trendy thing. And I like baseball, but it's not more entertaining than football, and it takes a long time to play a game. Sometimes it takes like four and a half hours to play a game of baseball. So I don't see this being a solution to any big problem.
No, this seems like creating something out of nothing for no reason. Ottawa Red Blacks games, they're the hotbed for the young crowd in Ottawa. I've been to a lot of games in Hamilton. Yes, there is an older crowd there. I saw a lot more older people sitting in the lower sections, probably because it's a bit of
money.
It's a bit of a chore to climb those stairs. Mm-hmm. But I see a lot of young people, a lot of people in their mid-20s to mid-30s at Ticats games. I don't think they have a problem attracting younger people. And the idea that shorter games, like it's the idea that millennials or the younger generation, their attention spans are waning. But I can tell you from firsthand experience, and I know anecdotal evidence isn't evidence, old people are on their phone all the times too. And they want to be constantly stimulated as well. I think we just have to accept the fact that nothing you do is going to attract people who don't like football. You have to bred football fans, and the quarters could be 12 minutes, they could be 5 minutes, they could be 30 minutes. It wouldn't make a difference if they don't like football. Just because the games are short, you're not going to attract new eyeballs. This just seems like fixing a problem that you can't fix anyway.
You know, and you talk about the younger crowd coming to games. I go to the games at Edmonton, and there's a pretty decent, you know, there's a lot of young people going to those games too. So maybe in certain markets, you're having trouble bringing the younger crowd to the game, but I just don't see 12-minute quarters being a solution to it at all.
No, I don't see it either. And you know what? We're going to be at Grey Cup, man. So let's see what the crowd looks like there. The young versus old. And the thing is, it's not a young old thing. Like I said, you're a football fan, or you're not a football fan, and I don't think it's going to make a difference how short or long the games are. Fans are fans, and I think that you see fans of all ages because they like the game. And that's, I think, the beginning, middle, and end of it, to be perfectly honest. Let's talk, Mike. Labor Day. It's finally here. We have reached the midway point of the season, and we have reached the game of games. It's the Labor Day Classic. If you're listening to our show, you know what this is. But, you know, just in case we have some new listeners out there that maybe just got into the game and aren't aware of what the Labor Day Classic is, it's our Hamilton Tiger Cats hosting the Toronto Argonauts on Labor Day Monday at Tim Hortons Field. We're going to do our why we'll win, why we'll lose thing that we always do. And as much as it pains me to do this, since the Ticats won last week, Mike, you get the honors of telling everyone why the Ticats will win this game. And I have the unenviable task of telling everyone why they will lose. So in the interest of starting on in a positive fashion, Mike, why don't you take it from here and tell everyone why the Ticats will get back to 500 and beat those stinky, smelly Argos on Labor Day?
Well, I just think that the Ticats are a better team overall. You look at their players. The receiving group I think is better. Our quarterback is more experienced. I think he's way better than McBLT. He has had some good games, but he's no Jeremiah Mazzoli yet in his career. James Wilder Jr. has been underperforming this year, in my opinion, which I predicted at the start of the season. But I mean, there's you have the home crowd in Hamilton that are going to be going nuts for this game. Every year it's the same. Those are just a couple reasons why the Ticats will win this game. And another one is there is Ticats defense. I mean, they seem to be getting better every single game, and they're going to give James Wilder Jr. a tough time. Nobody really on that receiving group besides SJ Green really frightens me. I think we're going to lock down all the receivers. I think we're going to lock down James Wilder Jr. I think we're going to get a couple picks on McBLT. It's going to be a good game for the Ticats.
Okay, so notice the tenor of my voice. I'm not happy to say this, and I don't believe what I'm saying right now, but I'm going to tell you why the Ticats are going to lose this game. First and foremost, it's a little lame, but the Argos have not won on Labor Day since 2012. It's been a long dry spell for them. They haven't won the Labor Day Classic since Tim Hortons Field opened, and every year they get closer and closer to taking this game. Last year, we had the massive weather delay, and that helped the Ticats eke out a tiny 2-point win. I think at some point, unfortunately, the Argos are going to win another Labor Day Classic, and I can see it being this year, mostly because James Wilder Jr., I think, is primed for a very big game. You talked about how good the Ticats defense is. There is one area where they have struggled, and that is run defense. And quite frankly, the run defense sucks. It is the worst in the league. They give up over 126 yards per game on the ground. I'm with you. I think Wilder has had a disappointing season so far. He has not been very consistent. He has not had good games against the Ticats in the past. But I think Hamilton's terrible, awful, no good, very bad rush defense. He could have a pretty good day on Monday in the Labor Day Classic. So those are my reasons, man. Just
Okay,
Wilder could
that's
have a big
fair enough.
day, and the Argos, they're going to win a Labor Day game eventually. So why not this year?
I suppose.
Yeah, I don't believe it either.
You're a disgusting person.
I
I've
am, I
been
am,
in the
I,
show. Yeah.
I, I, I feel
Just.
terrible. I'm gonna have to get a shower after this because
Yes.
I feel awful right now.
You better. You
Yeah,
better.
I'm gonna have to just cleanse my palate and my body of this filth talking about an Argos victory. Duh. And the worst part is if the Ticats win this game, I gotta do it all again in a week. I gotta talk about why
Yep.
the Argos will win the rematch.
We got to
Why?
keep rolling. You got to
Yeah,
keep it
hey.
rolling.
Football and sports are a superstitious lot, and you and I are superstitious enough that I am willing to bite the bullet and tell you why the Argos are going to win in order for the Ticats to win. I'd rather be wrong about why the Argos are going to win than to switch this up and have the Ticats lose. That's how good of a fan I am, Mike. That's how much I care about you too, buddy.
Yep, Josh brings it every week, folks. Every week.
110%. I think you just take it one podcast at a time. We are
Exactly.
the boring boilerplate quotes that people hate in the media. Anyway, that was Podski for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Argos.
Sock.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.